Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Kieran, it's Newsday, and I have to say, two of these stories make me feel very old. one of them, I think, might be a deliberate wind-up or a spoof, I don't know, but we'll come to that. Some kind of robot scarf, but we'll come to that bridge when we cross it, or we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, Kieran. Either way, both work. But before we start with the news, Kieran, you were there on Sunday. What a brilliant day that was. I know I tweeted this, but the sight of Chloe Kelly minutes after she scored the winning goal for England, the poor BBC commentator trying to interview her on the pitch, and she just heard the Neil Diamond song start off on the PA, just legged it, took her headphones off, ran away, and was last seen jumping up and down, singing Sweet Caroline, waving the BBC microphone in the air. It was the most joyous moment. And I don't know if those girls have had any media training, but most of them seem to ignore it after the game. And it was really refreshing. Their response on the pitch when they were being interviewed was just fantastic. And it must have been brilliant to be there, Kieran.
Yes, yeah, I was very fortunate to get tickets, and it was a wonderful occasion. You know, going up on the train, there were lots of people in England shirts. We met some German fans as well. They were brilliant. There was no hostility between two sets of fans. It was family orientated, which was great to see so many kids, boys and girls there. The singing, the match itself, I thought both sides to a certain extent cancelled each other out.
But yeah, yeah.
It was a tight game, but we won, and we were right behind the goal, six rows back. So wow. When Chloe Kelly scored that, it was limbs and scenes, and the Baroness was went into sweary mode again, as one would expect. Sort of what she said, the words that was brilliant, and there was a word in between was screamed from my from my school head wife.
Yeah. Also, do you know, watching it with Ed, my son, who's baffled by some of the behaviour of male England fans, and he just made the point. You know, you look at. You hope that 8-year-old girls in the crowd don't know why they should be booing the German national anthem, and therefore don't. You know, I mean, yeah. you could hear a pin drop during both anthems, which is how it should be. But it's fantastic, and we'll be discussing this, I'm sure, in weeks and months to come. Let's hope it is going to be the springboard that everybody wants it to be for a more equal investment in the women's game. And on that woke note, as the Telegraph would no doubt put it. The Telegraph are reviewing this now, Kieran, they'll be saying there's no need for that sort of woke attitude in podcasting. What's this country coming to? They're probably the sort of people who complained about how hot it was last week. Now, news, Kieran. And the first news story is a club that has always been on our good step, yours in particular, Plymouth Argyle, and they've received some fresh investment from the United States.
Yes, what's happened at Argyle is that they've issued new shares to some American investors who are going to take up a 20% stake in the club, I think for around about £4 million. And if Plymouth fans are starting to get excited, you know, does this mean we're getting a new centre forward? It's going into the long-term growth of the club. So it's going into infrastructure. Argyle want to build up academy facilities, training facilities. They want to have a better opportunity to identify and improve talent. So it's part of the long-term plan from the club. You know, we are appearing live there in September, and we'll be having a chat with them on stage. But it's the right approach, because there are too many examples of people coming into football, getting out the checkbook, going down the route of let's sign somebody on the advice of an agent or the advice of somebody who actually just wants to get hold of our cash. And the club doesn't necessarily move forwards. If you get the foundations right, it doesn't matter what stage of football you're at, get your foundations right, then that gives you the springboard to progress the club. And it might not be as glamorous and it might not be as instant, but if I take a look at what's happened at my club, it was get the stadium sorted, get the training facilities sorted, and then we'll get into the Premier League and we'll try to stay there. And that's been the approach. And I do think that if you've got a board of directors who see the broader issues and the long-term strategic issues, then that is beneficial. And you don't end up being a yo-yo club or having one good season followed by four or five fallow ones.
Yeah, just a note to all those people, and there are very many of them. It's nearly sold out, our next live show at Plymouth Argyle. We take questions from the audience. We get people to write their questions down, and then producer guy half-heartedly sifts through them, and then you and I full-heartedly sift through them.
yes.
just a little note. Any question that has got the word sleeping giant in it probably won't get read out. And if Kieran or I accidentally use the phrase sleeping giant, we will buy you a drink for every time we do so. So just that's the one set of parameters we're having. Very much looking forward to it. Now, Kieran, as a Palace fan, when I see the word hedge fund in relation to any football club, I get a bit twitchy, because it was a hedge fund getting involved with us that led to our second administration. But the hedge fund who own Coventry City have apparently said that they are open to offers for the club, which may or may not be good news for the fans, I suppose, who have been through, on the quiet, a very volatile time in the past few seasons.
Yes, but I think this story's actually come from the Financial Times, which I think is indicative of the extent to which football and finance has become a mainstream topic as far as the world of finance is concerned. Coventry City are presently owned by this hedge fund called Sisu, and they bought Cov in 2007, and nobody could quite work out what their rationale was. Although at the time, I think the stadium was owned by, I think it was partly owned by the council, and they were trying to buy the stadium back at a knockdown price. And I think that the aim would then be that then we can go and sell off and make some money on the back of it. But that's never materialised. And I mean, to be fair to Sisu, Coventry have made losses in the majority of the years under their ownership, but they've underwritten those losses. And then the stadium, which to you and I is the RICO. I know it's now the Coventry Building Society Stadium or something like that. But you know, we're old school. To me, it's still the RICO. That was acquired by Wasps Rugby Club, and effectively Coventry became the tenants. And there's been disputes, and we've seen Coventry, effectively being evicted and playing in Birmingham and elsewhere on the back of that. But in order to buy the stadium, Wasps took out a loan. And this loan is around about £35 million, on which they are paying 6.5% interest. Or rather, they're not paying 6.5% interest, because they've defaulted in terms of the most recent repayments. So this is indication that Wasps themselves have got financial problems. And it looks as if, And we've got to say a significant degree of caution here, that there is an opportunity for somebody else to buy the stadium from Wasps, and therefore this gives a chance for new owners to come in. And what they can effectively do, they might be able to buy the stadium and buy the football club at the same time, because there are potentially two willing sellers. And if that is the case, then Cov could be up for sale. Yeah, that they're back in the Championship. Yeah, they've knocked around the lower leagues for a while, but they're back in the Championship. They won their, they got a point at Sunderland in their first game. Mm. And most of all, from our point of view, they're back with that kit, which we both remember from the mid-70s. And I was always thinking, should I go and buy that Coventry away kit? Remember the one you'd associate with Mick Ferguson and Ian Wallace, the chocolate brown one with those strange Adidas, the strange Admiral stripes going down the side? But I never had enough pocket money to afford one.
Yeah, I didn't like the brown one so much, but they got, remember they had that kit, and the FA wouldn't, the league wouldn't let them wear it for televised matches. It had a
Talbot, wasn't it? Yeah.
And Coventry said it's not a T, it's just the design of the shirt. And the league said, well, you can wear it, but not when the cameras are on. So that's only 30 odd years ago before shirts had sponsors on. I'm very old school, Kieran, so I still call it Highfield Road. I don't care where it is, basically. And I really miss away trips to Highfield Road. I never said this before. So it's an interesting, so potentially this is not anything that Coventry City fans need to worry about then, Kieran. This is not, it's not a fire sale. It's just, because I think most people back in 2007, it's like the Venkies at Blackburn. I don't think anybody would have thought that Sisu would still be involved 15 years later, would they?
Yes, I mean, yeah, the nature of a hedge fund is that when you buy something, you're immediately looking for an exit route, and that's the way that the business makes money. It's a flipper. It's a bit like Dion Dublin and the houses, that you buy, tart them up a bit, flog them off to somebody else, and you make a profit on the margin. But they have been there for the long haul. They appear to have a board of directors who certainly are saying the right things. And should be given some credit for that. And I'm the first to bash the private equity hedge fund mentality when it comes to not just football but other industries as well.
It's quite a pleasing image, Dion Dublin having the ground on Homes Under the Hammer, showing the new owners around. And these are stairs. Yes. Stairs. Look at this. This is an interesting one, Kieran, and the timing of this story in particular. As Premier League Chief Executive Richard Masters has confirmed that the investigation into Manchester City's alleged breach of profitability and sustainability rules is continuing 3 years after it started. Was he responding to a question about this, Kieran? Because otherwise, why would he feel the need to confirm it at this stage?
Yes, well, it is 30 years of the Premier League starting this season, and Richard Masters was effectively hosting a Q&A with with journalists, a bit like the Price of Football Live, except we'll be talking to football fans, and that's not to say that journalists aren't football fans, of course. But this was one of the questions that was raised along the broad issues. I think the subject of NFTs, but somebody asked a question specifically in relation to Manchester City, and clearly that there is still documents are being transferred between both parties. Manchester City were of course originally charged by UEFA. They were subject to sanctions from UEFA. Manchester City appealed, and they were successful in respect of that appeal. So it is dragging on a long time. The reasons for the delays are kept very private. I think neither party wants to give anything away. The Premier League is under a lot of pressure from other clubs, because, as we know, 6 into 4 doesn't go when it comes to Champions League places. Mm. And that's what's driving this more than anything else. It's those other clubs who think that if they can get Manchester City sanctioned in some way, then it might be the difference between getting into the Champions League and not getting into the Champions League, at the end of this season or the next season or whenever the judgment is made. It's not done for any genuine altruistic reasons or sense of moral or ethical behaviour.
So those Man City fans who complain that the Premier League have got it in for them have got it wrong slightly then?
It's not the Premier League as such. I mean, the Premier League is an administrative body which is beholden unto its shareholders. So it has 20 shareholders, and the Football Association has effectively a golden share, which it never uses. So they have regular shareholder meetings, and there will be pressure put on. There will be issues that are raised. There will be private emails between individual clubs to say we're outraged. We want to take the moral high ground on this, whilst they're announcing their new NFT and cryptocurrency sponsors, of course, with regard to City, because it's an opportunity to get one over on the opposition, and that's the nature of football ownership and football as a business.
I also read an article just a couple of days ago suggesting as well that clubs like Palace, Villa, West Ham are sort of trying to rub the top six noses into it. Following ESL, they feel that they've got a bit of a headwind behind them, and that they're trying to take advantage of that and maybe bring the top six down a peg or two still.
Well, I think that the major issues as far as all clubs are concerned are in terms of the distribution of money going forwards, and the big elephant in the room is the potential consequences of the government white paper and the fan-led review as to what is going to happen to the revenues which are generated by the Premier League. How are they going to be distributed? First of all, within the division, and the sneaky six, the Super League clubs, however you want to describe them, they use the threat of Super League to extract more and more concessions out of the other 14 clubs, and that has created effectively a glass ceiling for the ambitions of the non-big six clubs. And you talk to people in Newcastle, they're pretty frustrated about that. I did a podcast yesterday with Nick DeMarco, where one of the questions came from a Newcastle fan, in very much this particular area. And then there's the what's going to happen in terms of parachute payments and money to the EFL, and how much of that is going to have to be coming from the pockets of the big six compared to the other 14. So I can understand why the likes of Palace and Villa and so on, West Ham, want to extract as much as they can, because the big six have extracted historically benefits. So the big six clubs on average are earning £300 million more than the other 14 each season, and that makes for a non-competitive Premier League.
Now, Kieran, you know that some of our listeners think that my grasp of geography north of the border, north of Watford, residing, which is a Freudian slip because I think the border should be at Watford. I think my grasp of geography in the north of this country is shaky, Kieran, based on things like me saying recently that York and Derby were in the same general direction, for example, which my answer is, if you're standing in Bristol, York and Derby are in the same general direction. But I think I'm on fairly safe ground to say that Oldham is just down the road from Manchester. So just down the road from Manchester, Kieran, Oldham. Some good news for the first time in a while for fans of Oldham Athletic.
Yes, the old owners, Lemsigam, which was a pretty conflicted relationship with the fans in terms of part ownership of the ground, regular changes of manager, a lot of allegations that were made, and Oldham are now having to deal with life in the National League, have been taken over. And I think the new owner, Frank Rothwell, is what you want from a northern owner. And I don't want to fall into stereotypes because, I lived in Manchester for 40 years, but he's suitably eccentric. He wears a flat cap. He's 73. He's rowed single-handedly across the Atlantic. He's climbed Kilimanjaro. And he wants to put something back into his local town. So it has given a huge fillip. There's been a huge surge in sales of season tickets since the Rothwell family took over. And I think it gives the club some stability going forwards in having someone that the fans can rally around. Because when relationships break down, and this applies, a football club is a love affair, as we know, and it is, it's when you sort of fall out of love with the person who you love, it causes an awful lot of hardship on all sides. And I think Oldham fans can embrace their club once again. And fair play to all of those Oldham fans, the people such as Push the Boundary and other organisations who have been subject to some criticism from the club themselves. And then at times there's been threats from the club to ban people and so on. But everybody's kept up the approach that we want what's best for Oldham Athletic, and good luck to them this season. The National League is Division 5. We talk about the 92, but the National League is now professional. You've got some big hitters there playing some big wages, so Oldham won't find it easy at all. But I think they will certainly be using this as a springboard.
To be honest, Kieran, when I was in my 20s, I fell in and out of love all the time. Didn't give it a second thought. Then I found the right one. And again, just down the road from Oldham, Wigan Athletic have got a new shirt sponsor this season. And it's not one of the usual suspects, Kieran, is it?
That's right. And fair play here to Wigan. They are, and we've spoken about the Plymouth Argyle sponsors being a local charity, highlighting food poverty in some of the boroughs in Plymouth, and this is broadly similar. This is the Big Help Project, which is a national charity. It's based in Liverpool. It's a charity which deals with issues of food poverty, housing, giving money advice to people, employability, trying to give people a leg up, and that is absolutely critical. And the front of shirts deal has effectively been gifted to the charity by somebody close to the club. So we've got a few stories coming up later in this episode which you sort of just sigh about, but this is one of the ones where you can be proud of everybody involved. First of all, the football club, and secondly, wishing everybody at the charity all the best in terms of increasing their profile and all the great work that they do, and also hoping that we move forwards into a world with a bit like we've said, we'd love the day where we can stop this podcast. Well, it will be a great day when charities like the Big Help Project are no longer needed, but they are needed more than ever at present.
Yeah, do you know what? You mentioned the sigh with the last couple of stories. I'm just going to have to get through them by crossing my fingers and going, Wigan Athletic, Plymouth Argyle, Wigan Athletic, Plymouth Argyle. not such good news for Hartlepool, though, Kieran. They lost £366,000 in 2021, although that might be, in the scheme of things, not too bad.
You look at those numbers, say, club's losing £7,000 a week. That's not great. And then you benchmark it against other clubs, and you realise, actually, probably wasn't that bad, because 2021, remember, was the season which was effectively lost to COVID. The club did take advantage of furlough, which is right and proper, in my opinion, because remember, people talk about furlough. It's actually the job retention scheme, and it has allowed the club to continue in 21-22. But it shows that the big numbers and the overheads of running a football club are not unique to the top two divisions, and it does go all the way down the pyramid. Hartlepool are finding it tough, back in the EFL as well.
Now, Ken, this next news story, I've got a question about the wording of it, because what Guy has sent, it says Aston Villa have set up a borrowing facility with Barclays, which is secured on broadcast revenues for the next two seasons. Does that mean Aston Villa have borrowed some money from Barclays, or they've set up a kind of pool that they can dip into if they want to?
Well, having read the document, it's probably the second, but it could be the first. Right. The What's happened is that if you borrow money, there's two ways of borrowing money. First of all, you can effectively go down the route of an unsecured loan or a credit card, and because if you default on your payments, the lender has no fixed claim against your assets. They tend to charge you additional interest because they're taking on additional risk. Then there's the route that Villa have gone down, which again is quite common, in which you come to some form of arrangement with a bank. So looking at this, Barclays is trying to position itself as the Premier League's go-to bank. So you can understand why they want to have done this. So of course they've recently lost the Newcastle account, but as we said last week, that may be connected to personal historical relationships between Amanda Staveley and her claim against Barclays, in which some of the comments made by people at Barclays did not come across particularly well. So if Villa can have an overdraft facility, which I would imagine be part of this deal, that makes sense. And the reason for that is that the biggest cost for a football club is wages, and wages tend to be fairly constant per month because everybody's on contract, so you know exactly how much is the overall wage bill. But the money coming in is far more lumpy. It's far more volatile. You've got a big surge from season ticket sales. The money that comes in from Sky, people think, oh, well, does Sky pay money every month? That's not the case. Premier League clubs get a large tranche of money from the Premier League itself when it gets the first instalment from Sky, which is front loaded. And this is in the interests of all parties. First of all, it allows those clubs to cover their costs in June and July when they've not got any matches taking place, so therefore they've not got money coming in for those 2 months. But secondly, it helps Sky because the money that comes in helps to fund the transfer market, and that allows Sky Sports News and so on to be able to tell the stories and to keep us informed with regards to the transfer market, which itself now is sort of has exploded as a thing. Football finance has become a thing. Football kits have become a thing. The transfer market is so much more intriguing than it was 30 years ago when the Premier League launched. So I suspect that there is certainly an overdraft built into this, because when you've got volatile revenues and constant costs, there will be some months when you need your overdraft, and there will be some months when you don't. But could there be a loan as well? Possibly, but given the wealth of the Villa owners, I'm not sure that they would want to go down that route.
Hmm. There will be some months when you don't need your overdraft, you say. That is an interesting concept. This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. We are living in an era of information overload, and we have more knowledge than ever before. But what do we do with it all? If you're in Notion, you put that knowledge to work.
It's a workspace designed not just for making progress, but getting inspired. And all I can say on a personal level, as for somebody whose life is quite chaotic, and I'm writing pieces for government and newspapers and media content, I've got my university commitments and I'm supposed to be writing a book, I use Notion all the time because it brings order into chaos.
Well, if you need order brought to your chaos, you can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning your ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, Or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Crawley Town have signed a player based on a vote by fans and NFT holders. Now, normally, Kieran, my response to that would be, Jesus Christ, the game's gone. But that would leave me nowhere to go with the last two stories. So yes. I'm just going to have to let it go in silence. Crawley Town have signed a player based on a vote by fans and non-fungible token holders. That's a sentence you wouldn't have seen even 2 years ago, isn't it?
Exactly. Well, yeah, Crawley do have the new owners, Wagme. Healthy skepticism is a good trait to have, in my view, if you work in the world of finance. But the offer to Wagme, the owners, to come on the show is there, and they sold they've sold these tokens to 5,400 representatives, members of the community, for want of a better thing, and that's raised £3.9 million, which is actually a lot more than Liverpool raised when they sold their NFTs. So Wagme are trying to pitch Crawley not as Crawley Town Football Club, but as the internet's football club, and there will be, and they're trying to give benefits to people who buy these tokens. So the way that it was split was that fans and NFT holders were given 50% of the votes each, and they could put that to saying, do you want a defender, do you want a midfield player, do you want a goalkeeper, do you want a striker, and they voted for a midfield player, and he's now been signed, and they've set up a fan council as well, so they do seem to be doing some things which within our remit of what we consider to be beneficial for the game. It'll be an interesting observation. Crawley as a town has a limited number of people that are going to watch the club play. Mm. So if you get 5,400 new people coming in with some sort of interest, now that interest may wane very quickly. It's a bit like a fantasy football team where if you're 10th out of 12 in your league after the first couple of weeks, your team doesn't get changed for the next 6 months. Mm. So we'll wait and see how this is going to develop. But it's certainly £3.9 million is the revenue that some clubs get in a whole year from all of their sources of income in League Two. So that is an achievement in itself.
It is, and if it's sustainable, then that is a fantastic achievement. I say this with some pride, Kieran. I suspect if you ask Palace fans to vote on the name of a player they'd like to sign, we'd end up paying £10 million for Boating at Boatface. on a similar note, Charlton have announced a partnership with NFT company Generous Robots.
Yes. For all the cautious optimism and praise that I've just given to Crawley Town, I'm going to completely reverse that when it comes to what Charlton have done. I think this is back of short sponsorship with Generous Robots, and I'm indebted here to our good friend Martin Calladine, who is one of those journalists that is prepared to get his hands dirty and to investigate. He's tried to get in contact with Generous Robots. They appear to not have a proper website. They've got no email address. They are their cryptocurrency, which launched at £1.68. It's now worth one pence. It's not particularly good. Getting a nod of appreciation from John Terry, probably.
Yeah. Does Michael Owen know about this? Because apparently you can't lose money on these things.
Yes. And then he said trying to find anybody connected to this organisation is practically impossible. He did manage to get a screenshot of somebody from Generous Robots doing an interview online, and the person was wearing a hoodie, had a scarf across his face, which had shades as well. I don't want to make too many connections, but when I used to go to my the family farm back in Tipperary, back in the 70s. There were some strange people with balaclavas that used to hang around there, which were quite frightening. And this guy didn't do himself any favors. And then we read that sort of trying to find out bits and pieces about Generous Robots. It says it's our mission statement is to change the focus of NFTs to a diversified utility to generate a high return for those who invest early, i.e. it's a Ponzi scheme. You try to get people to buy in early to find some other mug. Yeah, and this is what Bill Gates says. It's the find a bigger fool system. And that was of no it's just bad news. Yeah, and I've got to say to Charlton, what on earth are you doing?
So, for those of us who don't know, Kieran, I'm not sure. A Ponzi scheme involves paying dividends to the early investors with money from later investors. Is that pretty
That's
much
right?
It?
Yeah, right. Yeah. You buy something. You find some. You buy something for 10. You say this is absolutely fantastic. You sell it to somebody else for 15. They then try to say it's fantastic and find somebody who will buy it off them for 20, and so on. And eventually somebody says, "Oh, hold on, I've made a bit of profit. I'm going to start to sell," and the whole thing collapses like a deck of cards.
We've still got those two Jesus Christ stories to come. But before that, I suppose this bit of news is a cautionary tale to both Crawley and Charlton in a way, because in the US, the National Women's Soccer League has told its players they could lose out financially after the cryptocurrency platform Voyager Digital, one of the league's biggest partners, filed for bankruptcy earlier this month.
Yes, and it feels like today's episode is going to be crypto bashing, and it's not. You know, the stories are the ones that we simply pick up from what's in the public domain. Cryptocurrency is an unregulated, highly volatile, and easily manipulated market. And if you want to buy into that, knowing that those features, then I say good luck to you. You know, I'm not going to tell people not to do it. But it does come at high risk. And what cryptocurrency platforms are trying to do is that they're trying to seek legitimacy and normalization through association with sport and celebrity, because you know, having somebody who is an influencer or having an organization which people look up to as a commercial partner gives you indirectly that legitimacy. But Voyager Digital has gone bust. It has put a lot of money into the US League, and that money's now effectively gone. So how do you pay the bills? How do you pay the wages? It's a cautionary tale, and that's all I can say.
And now, Kieran, these last two stories, I'm going to be absolutely honest with you. I assume they're genuine news stories, but it's quite possible that producer guys had a bet with someone to see what he can get me to read out. Because the first one is that Manchester City fans will be able, should they choose, to wear a smart scarf next season, which will have a biometric sensor integrated into the fabric.
Yes, this is something that Manchester City have done with their technology partner, Cisco. And they have tried it out. If anybody's uses a bit of wearable tech, so if you've got a Fitbit, if you've got one of these, if you've got a smartwatch which tells you your heart rate, tells you how many steps you've done, it's broadly similar to this. It's going to measure, apparently, because it's got these sensors built in. It'll measure your heart rate, which as we know can get go up or down. It measures your body temperature. It measures how much you're sweating, and that links to the amount of stress. But the thing which intrigued me most of all was that it says it's going to measure your emotional arousal, perhaps that we might call it a spaffometer. I don't know how we do it. Yeah, certainly, if last minute equalizers, your emotional arousal is going to go through the roof. Who's going to wear them? I don't know what the target market is. There's no indication of price, but we wait and see. I don't want to be too cynical about it. Some people you know, if somebody told me years ago that I'd be wearing a watch which measures my heart rate, I go, well, why on earth would I do that? But you look at the number of Apple watches, you know, you go on any train journey, go to any match, and they're all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, in general, Kieran, anything that can give you an early warning sign about health issues is a very good thing. But it's hard enough to get an appointment at my GP surgery as it is without phoning up and saying, the scarf said I should give you a call. Essentially, yes. And then what happens next? We get a half and half smart scarf, which is smart enough to say, don't do a half and half scarf. I can just about buy this last one, Kieran. I don't even know what the words mean, Kieran. Everton fans are going to be offered digitally wearable shirt. What's a digitally wearable shirt, Kieran? How do you wear a digitally wearable shirt? You've got your scarf measuring your heart rate, and now you've got a chest full of pixels. What's happening in the world, Kieran?
Well, we were talking last week about, you know, only 44 clubs have home and away kits available to sell to fans. So perhaps this is an alternative. You know, Kevin, you know, when you or I pop down to the metaverse to have an online pint.
I said just last night, yeah.
Exactly. The online, yeah, the Meta Porson's Arms. I can just imagine. Oh, Jesus. We're only taking cash. Yeah. We're not taking credit. We're not taking cards. None of that nonsense.
Even in the metaverse, how he takes cash.
So according to Fanserv, who are Everton's partners, and Everton have somehow managed to keep a straight face in this, that they're only going to offer high-end digital shirts. So I don't know what pixelated polyester looks like, but you'll be getting premium pixelated polyester, Everton fans. And it's all going to be part of when you are in the metaverse. And perhaps, you know, we are a pair of, you know, I am a granddad. Perhaps yeah, this is an age thing, but I've never wanted a hyper immersive online fan experience as a fan. I just want to go to my football match and shout and scream, and yeah, I mean, watch it on the telly, I'll shout and scream as well. But that I was talking to somebody yesterday who. Somebody was, you know, substantially younger than me, and he says, well, you don't get it. You know, for a lot of people of the younger generation, they spend more of their life online than they do outside, and they do converse using, the metaverse, where this shirt is not for you. This shirt is for your avatar. So what we now can do is that when you go to your online version of the Porson's Arms, you can walk in and you can be wearing the latest Everton shirt with your latest designer online sunglasses. And by all accounts, people are willing to pay for this. And if you take a look at the world of computer games, we are seeing a huge amount being spent by people who want to have their Space Marine in Halo or whatever. Yeah, I don't play the games that much. I'm still battling my way through Zelda. But what you can do is that you can upgrade the kit that the people in these games wear, and that's going to cost you money. And that has become a legitimate revenue source in the sense that it's legal, but it's also become a lucrative revenue source for games companies. And I think that football clubs and some of their commercial partners are saying, well, if it can be done by Electronic Arts, if it can be done by Activision in the gaming industry, why can't we take advantage of that as well and make money from the football club? And yeah, you know, I think it's, you know, Everton fans have reacted with a suitable degree of we're not convinced about this. But yeah, also everybody knows that Everton are desperate for every penny at present, given their financial circumstances. And from their point of view, it comes as zero cost, yeah, you know, apart from people sniggering.
Mm. Speaking on behalf of my avatar, Kieran, do these shirts come in XXL?
Yes, well,
or do I just get do I get a slimmer avatar? Can I choose?
Well, yes, you can go everybody from Sid Little to B.A. Baracus, I think, as far as your your online.
you kind of ruined the effect of talking about the cutting edge technology and throwing Sid Little and B.A. Baracus in there as examples of people you can go as. I've always loved computer games, RPGs in particular. Alienhead bought me a Switch for Christmas. Other handheld consoles are available, guy. I know. And it's changed my life in that I've barely read a book in the 9 months since. But it's brilliant. But I am old school. I'm happy to admit I'm old school. I'd rather have a hyper immersive experience at Sellers Park, if that's possible. But Kieran, it's progress. It's the way of the world. It's the way young people interface with the world. And if the football club can make some money at the same time, then who are we to argue? Two bitter middle-aged blokes, that's who we are to argue. It will be both putting on Smith's albums when we get off this and stroking our Joy Division t-shirts, going, comfort, comfort. Thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page, including Andrew Leggett, Gareth Scriven, Stefan, Malachi Eastwood, Chris Motley, Duncan Filshi, and Ben Jackson, who reckons he's probably the first Dagenham and Redbridge fan to become a Price of Football Ultra. There you go. You don't get that in the internet, do you? If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to the pod, then thank you very much. It's really kind of you. You can do that by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball. And remember, if you contribute £3 upwards, you get the choice of an ad-free listen to the pod. And if you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. And in the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell that we know won't involve Sid Little and B.A. Baracus because he's throwing those names away.
Yeah, you've got those in the bingo. You've lost out, kids. As always, thanks for everybody for the support. We do appreciate it. And for those of you that keep me on my toes, I think on Sunday I'd said that if you played in the group games in the Champions League, you were cup tied. I was wrong, so I take that back. We genuinely do welcome feedback and constructive criticism, and we accept the abuse as well. If you want to support the show, Patreon is for as little as £1 a month is one route you can go down. Another route to show some positive vibes is to go on to your application, your app in respect of podcasts, and give us a review. If you'd like to give us 5 stars, we'd be most appreciative. It doesn't matter what you say. You could say you would rather have the show presented by Sylvester and Tweety Pie than myself and Kevin, and our egos could cope with it. If you're a fan of old school Warner Brothers cartoons, which I am, I'd actually be quite honoured if that was the case. So apart from that, thank you very much, and we will see you on Monday.
I couldn't stand that little Tweety Pie. Just
it was a bit of a know-all, wasn't it?
It was a bit. You just wanted one episode to end, maybe just the last episode ever of the series with Sylvester just deciding to carry on eating him. And the amount of times that Sylvester half swallowed him and then got and then got conned into not going the whole way used to really annoy me. Same with Tom and Jerry. It's like, Tom, he's got a frying pan. Don't run around that corner. You do it every time. You know what's going to happen. See, that's better than the metaverse.
Exactly.
A mouse hitting a cat with a frying pan. You don't get that in the metaverse, kids. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.